Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:06 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is August 28th. Platinum was up $35 in here today, and it would appear to be starting to take some of the impetus from the wider precious metals sector. It's still in its base formation. It's going to have to do a bit better than it has done today in order to break out, but this is certainly some encouraging evidence that we're in a return to demand dominance environment. There's been this sequence of higher reaction lows within the base over the course of the last 12 months, and it looks increasingly likely that platinum is going to start playing catch-up. I think it's interesting to look at some of the ratios. When, for example, we look at the platinum and palladium ratio, then we can see that platinum has now broken palladium's uptrend, and that uptrend has been underway for 3.5 years. So that's pretty significant. It suggests that not only is there some demand coming through for platinum, but that the outlook for palladium may not be quite as rosy as it has been over the course of the last few years. Palladium was in negative territory in here today, and it has failed to sustain the move up to test that $1,600 area. Now the question is whether it is going to continue to find support in the region of the trend mean. At $1,465, palladium is almost the same price as gold. In fact, it was higher than gold for a good portion of the summer. Now the question is really whether palladium is worth that much money, particularly considering that it's at a multiple the price, well, perhaps not quite a multiple any longer, of the price of platinum. Then when we think about how is it that the gold miners are doing, well, we have a nice ratio for that too. The Gold Bugs Index pushed on to new high ground in here today relative to the gold price. It's clearly broken the 3-year relative downtrend. So when we look at the outlook for the sector, and I'm going to look at the GDX for that, then it's now pushing through the $30 area. We can see that there's a short-term overbought condition, but this is still a really very depressed level, and we're still only just about breaking out of this really quite lengthy base formation. So this is just the first innings of what continues to look like a medium-term bull market. Then when we think about how is gold doing relative to silver, well, it's I think nice to look at it perhaps the other way around. How is silver doing relative to gold? And this is a very long-term chart, but it does highlight just how low silver got relative to gold. We haven't seen levels this depressed since the early 1990s. If we zoom in and just look at the last decade, then it's broken its downtrend. So again, this is very clear evidence that we're back in a demand-dominated environment for precious metals, and that investors are now starting to look beyond simply investing in gold, and they're beginning to pick up some of the other precious metals and precious metal-related assets. That's favoring silver in particular, also the gold miners, and now platinum as well. So we're getting an increasingly broad-based move. It is quite normal to see silver outperforming gold, and that is beginning to be appreciated by investors. Silver's, generally speaking, a high beta play on gold. That's what we're now starting to see evidence of. It was being doubted by some investors until really quite recently, but the fact that it is now, we're seeing silver breaking relative downtrends, that is beginning to suggest that we're in a period where silver is likely to offer leverage. It's also worth considering that when we think about the silver miners, and for example, the Global X Silver Miners Index of our ETF, It's performing almost exactly the same as the GTX, although it does seem to have a really reasonably similar pattern to the silver price. But what's particularly interesting is when we look at the constituents of the ETF, then even Pan American Silver, or for example, Polymetal International in the UK, they've invested really quite significantly in gold mining operations because silver prices were so low, it was simply uneconomic to mine silver for its own metal value. They had to expand into gold as well. The fact that Wheaton Precious Metals, which used to be called Silver Wheaton, is that's a I think a further iteration of this trend, that what had classically been a silver investing vehicle is now also a gold investing vehicle. And Korea Zinc, which, as the name implies, is a zinc company, well, they're relying on the production of silver as a byproduct of zinc mining for entry into this ETF. Well, what it suggests is that there's pretty slim pickings for a pure play on silver. And that is a testament to just how low prices were and how depressed an environment it had been. What it also helps to highlight is that we're still early in the precious metals recovery, and this is the time when miners do tend to do best. Eventually, when prices do rally, then they'll start to redeploy some of their profits into expansion, and it's in that greenfield expansion or paying over the odds for competitors or for explorers that that's when their company balance sheets do tend to take a hit, and then you start to expect just the metal itself to start outperforming the miners. But we're just nowhere near that right now. Gold prices and silver prices have only been rallying for a couple of months. We can anticipate that they may outperform the gold price for a couple of years. So that's, I think, something that is worth considering. Then, when we think about what's going on in terms of the stock market, I just finished reading Ray Dalio's latest missive. He's talking about pushing on a string and the end of the short-term and the long-term debt cycles. And there, when we hear storied investors sounding warnings about impending calamity, then we do need to pay attention to it. But we also need to pay attention to what is going on in terms of investors and the global outlook. The S&P 500 is still trading above its trend mean, and that means it's still in an uptrend. And as long as it's in an uptrend, we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. We do have an inverted yield curve, and the deeper that inversion becomes, then the more serious the lead indicator that it gives for a future problem. So I think we do have to accept that there is likely to be a recession within the next 18 months. So it's now the end of August 2019. That would suggest that the result of the presidential election next year is probably going to be a bearish catalyst for the market. It, on the one hand, it could potentially result in Donald Trump being re-elected, and unfettered by the pressure to gain re-election, then he'll go full frontal on the trade war. So that's one potential outcome. An alternative scenario is that somebody like Elizabeth Warren becomes the next president of the USA and takes a direct aim at the banking sector, at the financial sector, at the corporate sector, and also starts to blow out the deficits even further. And I think, regardless of who takes power, the deficit is going to become a progressively more important topic. Well, what it, then, of course, we have to think about what happens after an inverted yield curve. Generally speaking, the stock market rallies. And we have a very large quantity of cash on the sidelines. investors the world over have been raising cash over the course of the last 12 months, and consumers are also cashed up. And when, for example, we look at the mortgage rate, then when I'm just looking for the ticker, but we have ample evidence here that the mortgage rate went up to approximately 5% at the end of last year. It had been down around 3.5% in 2016. It's had even at the beginning of 2018, it was still less than 4%. We're now at 3.5 again, and this has been a pretty profound move. There is a significant incentive for anyone who's bought a home in the last 2 years to refinance at today's rates, and that will put more money in people's pockets. The national average gasoline price in the USA is approximately $2.58. When we look at the gasoline price, then there's still a downward bias to trading, although it was in positive territory in here today. The energy sector was among the top performers on Wall Street in here today. The oil price was off its highs, and there is still a sequence of lower rally highs. When we think about what's going on in terms of the copper price, then it has bounced over the course of the last 3 days, but it has a lot of work to do in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The continuous commodity index is also in positive territory, but it's still trending downwards. It's going to have to sustain a move above the trend mean in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. But there are some areas of the commodity complex that are doing better. The nickel price, for example, is close to new recovery highs, and that is feeding through from the outlook for battery demand. There are short-term considerations about battery demand because of the weakness of the global economy, but when we start to think about production levels for vehicles over the course of the next 5 years, then regardless of whether demand growth for batteries moderates by a few percent either way, there's still going to have to be a lot more nickel produced of sufficient quality to feed the battery sector, and that is helping to support prices. Then when we think about the simple fact of the matter that we have got very depressed government bond yields, and the US 10-year Treasury is down to 1.46%. So that's a pretty profound move we've seen over the course of this year. It's back testing the lower side of the range that's been persisting now for the last 8 years. So there is certainly an overbought condition, and not much evidence just yet of any kind of resistance being encountered. Part of the reason for that is because there is still a massive quantity of negative yielding bonds, and it popped a little bit on the upside in here today, and it's up to now a new high of 16.77 trillion. And that's an enormous amount of money, and the reality is that the vast majority of it is concentrated in Europe. Even I can't talk and chew gum. The Italian yield is down now to 1%, having contracted pretty steadily over the second half of August. And of course, there is the machinations that are going on in terms of the Eurozone, where it's looking like a new coalition in Italy is going to be approved, making it less likely that they are going to renege on their fiscal treaty obligations. And it suggests that Italian yields could indeed fall even further. They're already testing the lows, and they're being dragged down by the relative value that we see with Germany. The 10-year Bund is still in negative territory, And on a relative value basis, that is dragging down the yields of just about anything that's benchmarked against it. So it's increasingly likely that Europe is going to have to lower interest rates. And there is the likelihood that the Federal Reserve is also going to lower interest rates. Against a background where the US consumer is still healthy, this is a recipe for a bubble. And that does suggest that the next significant move in stock markets is likely to be higher. If we then start to think about what does happen after inverted yield curves, that's usually what happens. It's usually that you get the inverted yield curve, then you get a significant move higher, valuations expand, the valuations that had previously been considered to be overly optimistic become silly, then you get a recession. And that's potentially, I think, the most, well, I personally think that's the most credible scenario that we have in front of us. The fact that gold is now rallying, where we see, and not just gold, but precious metals are rallying as a safe haven from the potential for competitive currency devaluation, incredible debt problems potentially, and a future recession. That's all being priced into gold, and that's also, I think, part of the reason why the price has been so strong and so firm over the course of the last couple of months. Then, when we think about some of those currencies, well, the Chinese renminbi was in additional weak territory in here today. They continue to devalue their currency in response to the trade war. There was certainly some back and forth trading in the Turkish lira over the course of the last couple of days, and that does suggest that there is a significant amount of volatility as a result of positions being taken, and also some efforts underway to try and support the currency from Ankara. Then, when we look at the Brazilian real, they've been trying to support their currency, and one would have to question why, and that there is little evidence that of any willingness by central banks to support their currency in an environment where we have competitive currency devaluation. But the real is right in the region of its lows over the course of the last 5 years, so it's a natural area where we might anticipate some support starting to come through. But it looks like more likely than not that, absent the scope for some short-term consolidation, that the real is going to move lower. And the Argentine peso has also been subject to an incredible amount of volatility. When we start to think about, well, what is the current scenario really comparable to, then I think that the late 1990s is a good candidate. That was also a time when emerging markets were experiencing a great deal of stress following the Asian financial crisis and the Russian debt default and the Mexican peso crisis, and then long-term capital management as well. We're seeing exactly the same thing now, that there's pressure on Argentina, there's pressure on Turkey, there's pressure on the Chinese economy, and the technology sector remains really quite steady. And the fact that the subscription business model, and particularly when it has been applied to the technology sector, is also still performing, then against that background, we have low interest rates, abundant liquidity, fiscal stimulus. That's all pointing towards a bubble. There is the real potential that we're in the bubble phase right now. And it's also worth considering that I'll never forget when I first started working with David. He gave me some of the old paper copies of Fuller Money. And the one that he had highlighted particularly was from late 1999 and early 2000. I can't remember the exact date, but it was where he had said there was an all change moment, that it was the industrial companies had been going down for such a long time that the old world companies, where they made real stuff, had been beaten up and nobody wanted them because of the massive move that had occurred in new technology. And they were trading at single-digit valuations and attractive yields just as the NASDAQ bubble was popping. And 3M continues to trend downwards. And there has been already a significant amount of bad news priced in, and it is still facing additional class action lawsuits. And that threat of class action lawsuits is pummeling a significant number of these highly innovative industrial companies. Well, eventually they are going to become such good value that they'll be irresistible. They're probably not there really just yet. 3M, for example, is still trading on a PE of 16, and the yield is around 3.6%. 3.5% has generally been at a level where dividend aristocrat companies have been capable of attracting investors. And I think we could argue that that level should be probably starting to come down, considering the relative value that you have with extraordinarily low bond yields right now. What we can also think about is that high yield spreads are relatively well contained, and high yield bonds are doing reasonably well. They continue to hold this sequence of higher reaction lows, and I think it's worth remembering that high yield bonds trade like equity. So they pulled back very violently at the end of last year, and they're firming now from the region of the trend mean. And that is potentially what we can anticipate from the major Wall Street indices. When we then think about what's going on in terms of Europe, well, the Euro Stoxx index is right in the region of the trend mean, but it is firming, and there is the likelihood that we're going to get additional stimulus for Europe. And the Nikkei in Japan is also continuing to hold that psychological 20,000 level. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.